This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's time for the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the Ferg Sports Bar and Grill Studios, across from Tropicana Field in downtown St. Petersburg, Florida. Providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps and the pros across Tampa Bay and the USA. Get your head in the game with the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and your hosts, Mike Rickard and Ben Botham.
We're going to be having T-shirts made up. Mamba and Mamba Seed Sports Foundation, of course, the great Kurt Bryant, Kobe Bryant, and that is the moniker for body armor. But we're going to have T-shirts made up for all of the players that come down.
Very cool. That'll be great. Have them all decked out in some Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection wear, as well as our great sponsors at Coca-Cola.
Hey, let's talk a little more MLB. We didn't get a chance, and then we'll reach out to Jeff Mangold. Yeah. So as you see, let's give the times again, and they'll be down here at Ferg's. There is no Florida State, no Florida watch parties, so you can come down and watch MLB baseball, and they'll get you set up with a great screen tonight and this afternoon, I believe it is, four something.
Yeah, so today you have the Houston Astros versus the New York Yankees at 5:07 p.m., and then later on in the evening at 7:45 you have the Padres versus the Phillies. Hopefully the Yankees come back to beat the Astros. I am really pulling for that. And it's looking like the Yankees might have a chance here because coming into the game, they have a slight advantage. Houston just used their best two starting pitchers, Justin Verlander and Valdez. And the Yankees are about to use their two best starting pitchers, Gerrit Cole and Nestor Cortez. Nasty Nestor is going to be coming out. Not this game, but the next game. So I do believe the Yankees have a good couple games ahead of them, as well as the next three games for the Yankees are going to be at home. So hopefully this kind of aids Aaron Judge. As you saw in the last game, he hit a very deep fly ball, but just couldn't quite get out of the park.
So we got three straight at Yankee Stadium?
Three straight at Yankee Stadium, and hopefully no more rainouts. You know, that's been a big problem recently with the Yankee Stadium. For some reason, they've been a magnet for weather.
Yeah, they had, even when they were playing the Rays towards the end of the season.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. It's the summer squall coming, or I guess not even.
Fall squall, dude.
Fall, I forget.
Yeah, wait a minute, Benny. Come on.
See, the minute he gets on, he's got to correct you.
There it is.
Want me to mute his mic until we get done?
I'd be okay with that.
We just had a great conversation. I just bragged about you. We just had a great conversation with the Largo Packers.
Yeah, I noticed you had him over there. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously Lakewood is one of the better teams in the state. I think last ranking you gave me, they're ranked number 38.
Yep.
But still, they're in first place in the district and looking forward to things.
Absolutely. They talked about the game last night, I take it, huh?
No, you know what? I didn't go into detail of the game. I knew it was a loss. Marcus and I talked a lot of Iowa football history. I didn't realize he was a Largo grad. I think it's great. His first tackle playing for the Hawkeyes. He popped the Largo L's, and most people think that stands for losers, but he popped the Largo losers, and I thought that was a great story to share with us. And then I talked about the Sunbash Media Day that you and I will be involved in. Right now, though, we'll stick with MLB baseball, and if you can pull up some factoids or anything you want to talk about, why I call my good friend Jeff Mangold. We're going to talk a little Yankees with him.
Sure. Moving into the Astros, though, the Astros here are moving into their lesser of their lineup here with the right-hander Christian Javier. Will start Game 3, and Lance McCullers Jr. will go into Game 4 on Sunday. This is Javier's first postseason with the Astros, but he has been very good against the Yankees' offense. He struck out 13 batters in 7 no-hit innings on June 25th at Yankee Stadium. But here's a little thing, because it looked like Lance McCullers was supposed to start the Game 3, but the Astros celebrations are going to hinder their performance, because at the last celebration that they had, he actually banged his elbow on a champagne bottle during the ALDS celebration after beating Seattle.
My God, the Jesuits stand out. Man, look at that. But hey, you know, just shout out to Jesuit High School and to Lance for that. I just want to put that in real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk a little Major League Baseball and New York Yankees with my friend Jeff Mangold. He's been kind enough to join us in the past. How are you, Jeffrey?
Mike, good afternoon to you. How are you guys?
We're excellent. You in North Carolina?
Well, that's where I live, right outside of Wilmington. But right now, I am about 12 miles from Yankee Stadium.
Oh, but I wonder what you're doing tonight.
Well, I wish I could, but I'm going to be at a wedding.
Oh man! Well, you shouldn't have said that on the air. You should have made it sound cool. I'm outside of Yankee Stadium, even though you're driving by it.
I know. I'd like to be able to be heading towards the Bronx, but I'm sure they'll have a big screen up at this big wedding tonight. But that's how it goes. But I'd like to shout out to all the people that are affected from Hurricane Ian, and just the care and growth and support and recoup. Hope everybody finds their way from that.
Yeah, it was aiming directly at us, Jeffrey. And I'll tell you what, you say your prayers, but you don't wish ill on anyone. And I have two very close friends that lost everything, businesses and condos, and the rebuilding process. I don't know if people realize how many years it's going to take. But and the Minnesota Twins spring training facility was impacted pretty much. And our mutual friend Donnie Charlson lives has a place in the area, and he sustained a little tree damage. But we all know a lot of people down there in Fort Myers, and our thoughts and prayers with them.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk a little baseball. Of course, this time of year, I'm sure the memories just come flowing back for you, as many appearances as you had in the League Championship Series with the Yankees, and of course then the World Series. I have fond memories of when you were there as a fan then, just thinking back, and my sons and I sharing these stories. Here we are again, but down two games. Had you ever been involved with one of your clubs that were down two games and came back from it?
Yeah, we were. Very memorable. It was, I believe it was 2001 when we were playing the Oakland A's, and this young Oakland A's club came in the Yankee Stadium and beat us two in a row, and we had to go out to Oakland, and man, it was do or die. I remember getting on the buses after the game at Yankee Stadium, and our bus and the Oakland A's buses were right adjacent to each other, and those guys were happy-go-lucky and feeling good and confident and cocky, and I can't blame them. And I remember getting on our bus and just thinking, wow, is our dynasty over here of you know, winning in 1998 and 2000? We went out there, and that was the first game out there in Oakland was the famous Jeter flip to Posada that tagged out Jeremy Giambi at home plate. So the adrenaline is flowing, and that these players at this time of year are fatigued and tired. But when they come out there to the stadium, and the power of the fans, the enthusiasm, the adrenaline is supercharged, and that's just something that such a natural high. It's fabulous. It's great.
Well, I want to ask you a question as a trainer, when you've got that regular season, it was a grind, kind of, you know, as Aaron Judge had all that emotional stress as well. What's a trainer do to assist through that process?
Well, at that point, as a strength and conditioning coach, that some of these guys, some of the players, they're very superstitious. They want to keep on their regular routines. And even though that at that time of the year, I would tell the players, listen, guys, you don't need to do any lifting at this point or any extra conditioning work. We're at this point where it's just suited up, listen to the anthem, and go play. But some of these guys will continue to lift, and because it's such a part of their routine, and just a matter of trying to get some good rest, get your fluids, and show up at the ballpark and get it on.
Didn't you say that A-Rod was one of those guys that had to work out before the game, and then he had to have you come in and give him some tell him a story that would get him accelerated and psyched up and he'd ask you to come in while he was working out. He'd be one of those guys that'd be kind of tough to deal with if you didn't want him lifting weights.
Right. That's how you had to get to know each player and what works for them. And Alex was one of those guys that he prepared himself so well prior to a game of getting warmed up, getting loose, getting sweaty, just like a boxer going into the ring. You better, if you're a boxer, if you're a fan and watching a boxing match, if that boxer comes in the ring and not sweating, that's a problem. But that's the physical aspect of it. But like you mentioned, the mental aspect of it too. But one story about Alex, I might have mentioned this on the air before, but he'd like to have tell him a story to get him psyched up. So I'd have to kind of think on my feet sometimes and come up and create some things. And one of my favorites was, he goes, come on, coach, give me something to get me going. So I said, Alex, today there's a busload of kids coming in from upstate New York, and it is a blind school there that's none of them can see, but they're all big fans of yours, and they're coming down today, and they know that they can tell when you're batting because it's the sound of the bat when it makes connection with the ball when you hit, and they just want to hear that. So,
And he believed it.
So he's going, yeah, I like that. Yeah, I got you. Okay, all right.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Hey, let's get your perspective on this 2022 squad. What do you like? Where do you think there's holes that have got him in this 0-2 position against the Astros that they're going to have to turn things around? Obviously, they got three games at home now, crucial to win if they could sweep at home. What's your perspective of this team this year?
Yeah, ideally, in short term, right now, how it started off when you're on the road, you definitely want to get a split to come back to your home field 1-1, ideally 2-0, but that's tough to do. But I think for the Yankees, I think a lot of people have mentioned this year how much they score on the long ball and how they depend on the long ball to score runs. And it has proven out in this series that it's first game was 4-2, second one was 3-2, and I think most of the runs were with the long ball. But you've got to find ways to get on base and either a bunt or steal or sacrifice flies and just play the short game to be able to get runs, because these pitchers are locked in. These bullpens, both bullpens are fabulous. And Houston's is definitely come in there and they shut the door and they do their thing. But it's a matter of getting the key two out hits, or just put some hits together to score some runs.
And that seemed to be a difficulty with this team in situations like this. And that same thing happened late in the regular season.
Yeah, it does. It stands out that way. And like the old adage, they all say good pitching beats good hitting, and that's usually the case. And Jason Verlander, that game number one, he was, like they said, you better get to these pitchers early. You better get them in the first or second inning, because they are going to lock in and get comfortable, and that's why they get paid the big bucks. But if you don't jump on them early, you're in trouble.
You're listening to Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. We're having a conversation down here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill with Jeff Mangold, former head trainer and coach with the New York Yankees in the glory days. He's got some rings sitting at home he's very proud of. I got Ben Botham with me, my baseball insider as well. Jeff, he's got a question for you.
Hi, Ben.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to have you on.
Good, man.
Glad to have you on the show again. But you're right here with through the two games that the Astros are struggling as well. When you look at hitting for a lot of their big stars, Alvarez and Altuve have gone for a combined 1-for-13 with three walks. They're getting a lot of standout performances from some of their other guys, like Bregman, who finally came back and produced a decisive blow with a 3-run home run in the third inning. And he's actually been getting some help from a local kind of here, Tom Brady's trainer. So do you think that the trainers are making a big impact in the games here?
Oh, that's, you know, it's a matter of being prepared and being ready, and because if you're not healthy, you're not going to be out in the field. So from that standpoint, for Bregman, that he's out there and he's playing well, and there's a lot that goes into that, and part of it is your strength and conditioning coach, and to have them ready to play. But yeah, Bregman is a guy that he's. All those guys are dangerous, and also with the Yankees, too. So it's a matter of when you get your pitch, don't miss it.
Hey, I got to ask you a question. You know, your era versus, you know, today's game. And it just seems like there are so many more injuries today's teams. Because the investment in these teams, are the teams more cautious with their players, because, you know, these are million-dollar corporations that they're acquiring, essentially, if you want to look at it from that perspective. And are the numbers that far removed from the number of injuries you'd see on a Yankees team, you know, let's say in 2001?
Well, I think there is more injuries that are going on. And what you mentioned, Mike, is that I think organizations are more cautious. I think possibly the players themselves are alerting the athletic trainers to say, hey, listen, I think I tweaked something in my rib cage here. I don't know. We better check this out. Maybe days gone by, some of these other guys might have just said, you know what, I'm all right. I'll try to figure this out. But it's such a gray area of what causes these. Mainly it's rib cage problems and hamstrings, but it's just from just being such a dynamic, explosive sport that there's so much torque involved, especially in swings, that these guys are so strong that their tendons and ligaments just can't handle the explosiveness of the bat speed that they're generating.
Wait, you just touched upon it. They're so strong, you know. Down here, they've got an incredible $200 million investment in Wander Franco. Now, this young cat is only 22 years old, and he tweaks his hammy all the time. And in my opinion, they're overworking out. And you saw incredible athletes with a lot of speed back in the day. And you didn't see hamstring injuries as much as you do today. And I'm asking an expert. Do you think they're overdoing their workouts to the point of, you know, if it's counterproductive to get that strong, well, then why do it in the game of baseball? I don't understand it.
Right. That's where the programming, it has to be sports specific. The training aspect, the strength and conditioning aspect has to be definitely tailored to the sport, but also beyond that, even in a more microcosm, is to be tailored to that individual and to know what they can handle and what they cannot handle. And sometimes it's best just to, like a racehorse, like with Mariano Rivera, just get them warm, get them loose, and let them go run. Just like, just get a racehorse. You got to get them warmed up a little bit and let them go. Sometimes you just don't try to recreate the wheel.
So I brought this up right before he came on the show. Lance McCullers Jr. is taking an extra day off because he banged his elbow on a champagne bottle. You guys had a lot of celebrations with the Yankees. Have you ever heard of such a thing? Everybody bumped their elbow on a bottle of beer or something stupid like that?
Well, I do know that. I'm trying to remember that Derek Jeter hit a home run. I think it was against the Arizona Diamondbacks in the 2001 World Series. And as he was circling the bases and came in the home plate, that he jumped up in the air to come to all the players that are getting ready to greet him. And he came down and he landed on his heel. And so he had a deep bone bruise in his heel that really affected him. And he's the type of guy that's not going to talk about it or let anybody know about it. But he did say that by celebrating, by jumping up in the air and landing strange on, he landed on home plate, that he had a real bad bone bruise on his in his right foot. So those crazy things do happen, but yeah, that's pretty strange.
Well, they even talked about that in that four-part series about him. They talked about it. Of course, they didn't really want to talk about that Arizona Diamondback World Series that you were a part of. But they talked. He did talk about it in that documentary that did impact him.
Yeah, that was, it did. But he's the type of guy that he was. He's a tough cookie. He is a tough hombre. He'd go out there and play. Yeah.
Now you. I'm sure you watched it because that was a big part of your life. What'd you think of that four-part series?
What was strange was to hear Derek talk so much. That in as the series showed that he was very close to the vest and just would give yes and no answers and not elaborate to the media. And he kept things a tight circle. So it was very strange to see Derek sitting there and just elaborating extensively on his thoughts on reporters, media, certain activities during the season, his relationship with the fans and with other players. So that was one part of it that was kind of strange. But he's a sharp individual, to say the least. And but it was just gave a great total rundown of his drive and his vision as a young player, as a young athlete in grade school and high school, and how he set his goals and accomplished them.
And he did set those goals, and it's amazing that he was spot on in his pursuit of them. Hey, before we let you go and get to your wedding festivities. Looking at the two series, the National League and the American League, and we know who you want to win in the AL. What's your prediction, if I could speak, for the World Series right now? Is it too early to get a prediction idea?
I don't know. At this point, if you had to put money on it, you'd probably have to put Houston in there, and I think the Phillies. I don't know if they're tied up 1-1 or what their status is, but. The Phillies have no pressure.
2-1. 2-1.
2-1. San Diego.
Phillies. Phillies 2-1.
I think the Phillies will do it. That they're just playing with house money right now. They're free and easy, and I mean they've made a quantum leap. We don't see this very often where a team like the Phillies, they might have great success by getting to the first round or even making the playoffs. But they've advanced to this position, and there's no pressure on them at all. They're having a good old time. And the same could be said for San Diego also. But I think the Phillies just have momentum going their way and finding ways to get it done.
Well, being from the great state of Iowa, I never have asked you who's your favorite college team. You got your master's at Nebraska, and if you're a Nebraska fan, I feel for you in these dark days in Lincoln, Nebraska. Who is your favorite college team?
I follow the Florida Gators.
Oh, I forgot you were at Florida for a while.
That's right. I was there in 82, 83 and part of 84 when some of our listeners weren't even born yet.
Well, Ben Botham wasn't even a thought in his mom's and dad's heads at that point. No, I got some youngsters in front of me.
Yeah, but I still follow the Gators really hard.
Did you have great experiences there? 82-83, was Spurrier a coach then?
No, it was Charlie Pell. And that was the foundation of the advancement of Florida football, that he came in from Clemson and really set the tone and the foundation for getting some of the in-state players to stay in Florida. And getting some of the top players to stay right there, and many of those players went on in the NFL that were there. Lomas Brown, Neil Anderson, Ricky Nateel, all those guys. Yeah, Wilbur Marshall. Just some fabulous players.
Wilbur Marshall from the 1985 Bears was also a Gator. I forgot that.
Yeah.
Well, that also was about the time that Bobby Bowden came to town at Florida State. So both programs started their resurgence about that time. And of course, Miami was coming on the map as a powerhouse then. And unfortunately, all three of those schools right now are not unfortunate for a Midwestern Hawkeye fan, but they're all three kind of in rebuild structure again. Not desperate, but rebuild.
Yeah, they'll be fine. And I think the Gators got their man in Billy. I can't think of his name right now, the head coach, but came in from Louisiana of Lafayette University. But yeah, no, they'll be there, and you can't keep those teams down for too long.
All right, my friend. Well, our alma mater, Bishop Heelan High School, they're in a rebuild process too. I certainly hope they can get it accomplished. You remember the LaFleur family?
Yes.
Dan's son Johnny, who played at Iowa, he's the head coach now, and hopefully he can get it turned around to the days of pride at Bishop Heelan in Sioux City, Iowa.
Yeah, that's a hotbed for all sports, that Sioux City area, that's for sure.
Yeah, all right, my friend. Well, I appreciate you coming on this Saturday, talking a little Major League Baseball. Which World Series was your favorite, real quick?
I would probably say the first one. It's the most purple one. And the fans can read about it in my book, Power and Pinstripes, that is on the market. You can check it on Amazon, Power and Pinstripes. But a lot of my stories are in there, and my reflections on my activities in my career with the Yankees and the Mets. But in 1998, that was the first time that I tasted that level of getting to the World Series and how electric it is, that you pinch yourself. You can't believe you're doing it. But you can't believe you're right there in the dugout. Then comes to that game clinching moment, and that it's such a natural high that it's something you never forget.
Well, I picked up the book. The book's a fabulous read, my friend. Even if you're not a Yankee fan, for guys like Ben Botham, that's a historian and loves the game of baseball, it's an excellent read. How do they get it? Amazon, I'm sure, right?
Yes, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. That's the best locations to go ahead and get them. Yes.
All right. Well, he's Jeff Mangold. Thanks, my man. I hope to talk to you soon. And I didn't know you're a Gator fan. Go Gators, too.
That's it. They got the week off, so they're not getting beat this week.
Yeah, well, the Hawkeyes are probably getting beat like redheaded stepchildren right now. They're playing Ohio State, and I don't even want to look at the screen.
Okay. I understand.
All right, man.
Mike and Ben, thank you. And best go out to all the people affiliated with the horrible hurricane, and let's build from there.
All right. Florida strong, as they say. All right, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Mike, thank you. See you, Ben.
And he's Jeff Mangold. That was a nice conversation.
Oh, yeah. That was great having him on. Always great talking. You know, it's hard not to like the Yankees as a historian, just because of the history that comes with it and the greatness that has come out of that franchise.
For some reason, my 66-year-old brain kicked in. What was the name of the Derek Jeter series? The General? What'd they call it?
Oh, I'm not sure on that one.
Come on, man. Did you watch it?
In 2001?
No. The series that ESPN just ran.
Yeah, the 30 for 30 kind of thing.
Yeah, the four-part series.
Oh, okay. All right.
What did they call him? The boss, the general? I'm getting a brain fart. No, it wasn't that either. Anyway, great conversation there.
The captain.
The captain. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. The captain, because he was the captain, and he was one of the youngest captains that they ever had in the Yankees organization.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the 2001 season, Mike. I was, 3 years old? I was barely putting around.
I wasn't asking you for play-by-play.
He was barely talking at that time.
Play-by-play. All right. You guys have a little conversation here. I'm going to get a hold of He's Scout Trout, the All-American Bowl. I'll take care of that, and you two can banter back and forth about baseball.
I got some things I got to ask you. So, Benny, I want to ask you this. With the Padres, all right, between sun in the eyes and the outfield, and I tell you what, the Padres, they should have won an Oscar at home plate for, you know, for that, we'll quote and put it in quotes, hit by pitch. I mean, you always made players a target at home plate whenever you're pitching. What is your take? Come on, Benny. I want to hear the Botham point of view.
Well, if you're going to hit a guy, hit a guy.
Exactly. You know that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You got it. If you want to throw in and get near and hit somebody, might as well hit them somewhere good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I wanted to know your opinion. I mean, because, like I said, you're used to hitting batters, so somehow you went to Savannah State, but we won't go there on that one. But anyway, the eyes and the sun in the eyes in the outfield. I mean, that, especially with their sunglasses and all, that shouldn't have been a problem. These are seasoned guys.
They are. But let's go to Coach Trout, and then we'll catch up with that. Scout Trout, are you with me, my man?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Watching the games. It's a crazy day so far.
What game you got on now?
Syracuse Clemson.
What's the score of my Iowa Hawkeyes and the Buckeyes?
I think that's
a slaughter.
19 to 10 last time I checked.
We're hanging in there. Why don't you give our audience a little bio, where you're from, what you're doing, where you played at, and your role in working with high school kids from a recruiting perspective, and speak just a little louder, would you please?
Yes, sir. I started in 2016. I played ball my whole life. My dad played for the Steelers, and I went through a rough recruiting process because I got in a car accident my sophomore year, but I was the number two kicker in the country coming out of high school, so I still got recruited and went to Hargrave Military Academy, ended up converting to free safety linebacker on the Cup National Champions, and kind of wanted to play ball, was played quarterback in high school, running back, kicker, punter. So I really was more of an athlete than a kicker, but my dad kicked for the Steelers. So I got that ranking and rating. And in 2016, I started Scout Trout after retiring from pro ball, arena football. And really, since then, we've placed over 15, our athletes have received over $15 billion in scholarships. And the way we do it, though, is getting them up high in the public domain so they're found right away on Google and email blasting the college coaches, meeting them in person at the Senior Bowl over the past 6 years, NFL draft scouting. Making those connections has really been great. And my class of 23 really reaped benefits this last time. I mean, they all phenomenal athletes, all great players, a lot of guys from small schools, but all, you know, a lot of guys going D1. So really excited about that. And then I have my All-American Bowl game in Panama City. This will be the fifth one that we have this year. For kids that we find late in the process or want to need more work and want to play one last high school game with a lot of the best players from all over America, really excited about that too. And my other website's collegefootballnow.org. I'm kind of stuck in the middle of 2025 recruit rankings, and I'm going to be releasing the top 300 for that here today.
Give us an idea of some of the marquee college athletes that you have found that might have been diamonds in the rough, and you were able to discover them through your services and place them in a Division I school. You got any examples out there you can cite?
Well, there's a lot of them. The most recent was Austin Novosad. I mean, nobody was talking about that kid his sophomore year, and he's playing the All-American game in San Antonio on NBC. I got him rated as the number one quarterback in the country. He came in after his sophomore year, no offers. I was wondering why. I thought he was the next Tom Brady, I said, when you watch him play, but way more athletic than Tom Brady was in high school. This cerebral, quick, release. Everything you look for in a kid, awesome throwing motion, outstanding stats, proven winner. Now he's a 4- or 5-star guy committed to Baylor. Ohio State offered him not that long ago, and so did Notre Dame, but he came up. I mean, I don't, like, that was a kid that I was right away, I said, he's the best quarterback in Texas. And, you know, writing that on there when I was searched top 23 quarterback recruits and stuff, that would keep popping up in the top. And all of a sudden, he just blew up. And this year, he's tearing it up again. Consistency is a big thing for me in my recruit rankings. I mean, I believe that in the growth process of each athlete, I think there's a lot of late bloomers in the process, a lot of guys that come on their junior, senior year that go overlooked because this game starts so early with the recruiting rankings and offers going out. And then I've noticed a lot of those guys, not a lot, half of those guys pan out, and the other half, you know, I can easily replace with a new group that is, you know, just came on late and putting up phenomenal numbers, phenomenal stats, got wide receivers. I got to go through the database. So there's a lot of guys to talk about. Miles Rouser was one from 22. He had about, I think, 25 D1 offers. Committed to Arkansas. Had him since the eighth grade. A long list. Connor Harrell is going to be starting for UNC next year for the Tar Heels out of Thompson. He was behind Tagovailoa for a while there at and really didn't get to play till his junior year, so he came on his sophomore year and started to get looks, and I think he got an offer from, I'm not sure if it was Troy first or UAB, and then that kind of took him off in the process. You know how the game goes, get the first offer, and then everybody starts looking. There's a lot of guys. DeMarcus Foster is probably the best player under the radar that I ever encountered. He broke the Texas high school player. He broke the Texas high school rushing record for next year. After coming out, I put him out there, and one of my top players with TCU now, Max Dugan, I rated him. I said he was going to win the Heisman a couple years ago, and I mean, there's an actual opportunity for it this year, so I'm really excited about that too. Just seeing these guys succeed, man, is the big thing. Like, because I do the recruit rankings on collegefootballnow.org, and there's 1,400 plus kids on 23 now. There was over 1,000 on 21. And going back through on Scout Trout, there's tons of amazing. Right now, there's 11 D1 commits in 23. Some players from Florida. I know Anthony Rubio is a tremendous athlete. He came on with me in December, Marco Rubio's son. And he got offers from Buffalo and Bryant. And I think he's going to get a lot more here in the near future as well. He's got a lot of really fast, got outstanding speed. Really jump out the building, catch one-handed passes like Beckham, you know, if given the opportunity to put in that position, I think that gives a stud. There's a lot of Braden Sullivan's playing in a game from New Smyrna Beach. Not a lot of people know about him. He's a hard-hitting linebacker. Fits the bill, you know what I'm saying? All around. I'm on my computer now, but there's a lot of kids, man. That, like I said,
We're going to wind some things down today because we got jammed, but we'll have you on again. How do people get a hold of you, or do they or see these one more time? Give them that information, because I know there's fans out there that just like to follow this, let alone the parents and the coaches that need a tool like this. So how do people reach you out there?
The website that gets a lot of traffic this time of year. I mean, we're getting around 20,000 visitors a day to collegefootballnow.org. I do a lot for bowl season. I do predictions and stuff like that on there. Top 25 I'll have out today before everybody else releases it for College Football Now's playoff. But then we have all the recruit rankings on there. I have College Football Today, Rockfin, and then Scout Trout as well. But I'm on Twitter at Scout_Trout, and I have ways to contact me on my website. I have my phone number on there. I have a contact form and stuff like that for recruits and whatnot. Doing a lot of NFL draft stuff this year too, as well. So we got guys in college like Team Doss at Southern Miss. I think he's an under the radar guy. Played in my 2018 All-American Bowl, 6'6", 300 something pounds, runs 11-second 100. So got some guys that really panned out down the road. So be working with them as well.
All right, my man. We will talk to you the road as the season winds down and things get a little clearer on where some of these kids are going. And I appreciate you taking time to join us this Saturday.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
You betcha. That's Scout Trout.
All right, buddy.
it's amazing that this day and age, over 1,000 kids on a database, and coaches are going to them. Right now, we're going to get a hold of Augie Sanchez.
Oh, yes. It's time to put the man on the phone. He's been waiting to do this. I know you've been waiting to get him on the show, Mike.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're fortunate to have him right now. Augie, are you there, my man?
I got you.
Hey, Augie, how's it going? You heard my voice last night. So thank you for being on the show today with all of us.
Of course. I appreciate you guys having me.
So, Augie, I think I'm going to take over this for a few minutes before Mike steps in and all that. You know, this has been a rebuilding year for the Seminole Warhawks and all. And, of course, I've seen many years, and obviously you've been getting to know these kids. What's been the most positive you've seen so far as a head coach with this team?
I just think the work ethic we're trying to put, you know, bring to the program. I think the kids are buying into that. You know, we practice pretty hard. We go, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, going over football. And sometimes, you know, when you take over a program, kids are resistant to change. I think the kids have been buying into that. And kind of just the blue-collar mentality is what we're trying to bring to Seminole. And that's just been something that the kids have, you know, the kids have bought into that and bought into me. And it kind of sucks that it's coming to an end because some of these seniors are really good players, and I wish I had them for another year.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting watching these games this season, you know, both away, and of course I've had a chance to announce these games. And one thing I've noticed, and this has been a great thing, is that these guys are fighters, and the scores definitely say so, especially at home. Look at the Countryside game. Obviously, look at Tarpon, and definitely the game last night against Palm Harbor. Just from a positive standpoint, it's good, it's change, it's not these typical blowouts that they've had. The kids' morale has definitely been up because of these wins, even though some of them have been close. I mean, this got to be something for these kids to turn around and obviously see that there is progress.
I think so. I'm a competitor, so I hate losing. I know the kids hate losing. But games being close, we've been able to play some pretty good defense this year. Offense, we struggled at times. That's usually how it happens. You know, defense usually has the initial surge, and then the offense catches up to the defense. However, we you know you've seen them for the most part. We struggled a little bit offensively, but to be able to you know keep the games close, keep them competitive is a lot better for the kids' morale than getting blown out, kind of like you said.
Yeah, and absolutely. Let's just highlight two guys watching last night, Colby Outlaw and Omar. I mean, definitely they were the standouts last night. They've been really big all season. You know, tell me what makes those guys special.
I just think those guys enjoy. I always say I like guys who play football, or I like guys who love football. And those two guys love football. I think they love going to practice. They love competing. They're Seminole. They're Seminole all the way through. So I don't know. They're two special kids. I was really proud of Colby last night. I thought that was the best game he's played all year. Just decision making, being a leader, smart, positive. And then Omar's kind of been our do-it-all guy all year. Omar's a really good player. And we've leaned on him quite a bit throughout the year.
Go ahead, Mike. You're up. You know, you're going to ask something. Go for it.
Well, Augie, I just wanted to thank you for coming on. This is Mike Ricker of the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. And I've been talking to high school coaches for decades. And I'm so impressed that a young man, and literally young as you are, and the role model, knowing the career you had at USF, taking on this challenge to help these young guys. And then the young coaches I have on typically relate better to these young kids, so I'm certain that they're buying in that you want to build a program there at Seminole. It takes time, but you probably have their attention, and that's got to make you feel good and give you a base to build on in the future.
100%. I think when I took the job, I thought my age was an asset. You know, some people look at it as less experience and stuff, but in my time and how old I am, I feel like I have a lot of experience. When I finished playing, I coached at a couple, major universities, you know, had a chance to have a shot at the NFL. So I thought I was prepared for that. However, I'm a very structured, disciplined guy. I believe in setting the foundation for the program, and I believe that, you know, doing right every day and whatever you do, class, you know, at home and then on the field. And then I think it all translates together. If you're doing good at home, if you're doing good in the class, then it translates to you do good on the field. So I think the kids are buying in. I know there's a little bit, there's been a little bit of reluctance towards me, just because, you know, I am different from the last regime. And, you know, just anytime you take over a program, there's change, and there's people that are all the way in, and there's people that, you know, have the 1 foot in, 1 foot out. But I really think towards the end of this season, we've been getting a lot more buy-in from everyone. Last night, you could really tell that these kids, some kids you didn't know cared as much. They cared a ton last night, and that was good to see. Again, it just kind of sucks that we only got one game left.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny talking to some of the kids. Of course, they're, you know, the players, their top game is going to be obviously Osceola. 4 years, they did not win that rivalry game. They came back, finally beat Osceola. But for you, this being your first season as the head coach, what has been a game highlight that you remember so far? Like, what team has been that team that has stand out that night when these guys played them and just gave their heart? Was it Palm Harbor, Osceola? What would it be in your opinion?
It had to be the Osceola game. I think that was the game that they wanted to win more than anything. And kind of like you said, that's the rivalry game that hasn't gone Seminole's way. And that's the first time they've won in, I don't know, five or six years. And I just thought kids were bought in. You know, that was the Ian Hurricane. We were able to have practice on Saturday, Sunday. Everyone was there. Everyone wanted to be a part of it. And I think it all just kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, is you had the whole buy-in that game, and the outcome was, you know, Seminole wins. Now, I wish we had that every single game, and I wish we had the energy and effort and the attention to detail we had the Osceola game. But I think that just showed them that the harder you work, the better the results can be. And I think that'll be a, you know, kind of our mindset moving forward, going into next year with the younger guys and the guys that have been on this team that were fortunate enough to be a part of that Osceola victory.
Yeah, and obviously there's going to be a lot of room to grow. Obviously the last game of the season is going to be Pinellas Park at home, senior night and everything. It's coming to an end. The regular season, of course, is coming to the end and all that. One thing I want to ask real quick is that going into playing Pinellas Park, what's going to be one of the biggest challenges for these guys?
Well, Pinellas Park's a good team. They won their district. They got a good coaching staff. They're physical. They're tough. I think one of the biggest things, how do we cope with emotion? A lot of these guys will be their last time playing football ever. You know, they'll never get to play football again in their life. So I think that's going to be a big thing that these guys, you know, got to deal with. Are they going to be, you know, in their emotions and their feelings sad, or are they going to go out and, you know, this is the last time I get to play with my friends and my buddies and give it all they got?
And just real quick, you know, brand new coaching staff, actually only two returning coaches that Chris Miller had last year came back on, but you redid the whole coaching staff. What has this coaching staff brought to these guys? Just tell me, you know, quick breakdown, how have your new coaches been able to inspire these kids and motivate them?
Well, one of my all-time favorite sayings is when wishing won't work well. One thing about this coaching staff is they come to work every day. And tell you what, man, we're still coaching our butts off right now at the end of the year. We haven't thrown in the towel and just kind of said this is what we're going to do. Young guys, very similar to myself, that are on the staff. And we just work, man. We work really hard. The biggest thing we preach to these kids is toughness. We want to be a tough, violent football team. And that's what we're really trying to accomplish. And I think all of our coaches are on board with that. And that's what, you know, that Seminole tough mentality is what we're really trying to push.
I would say that Augie Sanchez mentality is what you're trying to promote, and I applaud you for it because it was successful for you, and it's going to be successful for the Seminole Warhawks. And I mean, you walked the walk. So, you know, we just had Marcus Pascal from Largo on and his kids, and, you know, he was extremely successful at Iowa and a nice little stint in the NFL. Guys like you, these kids, they pay attention more, and I wish you nothing but success. We'd like to get you down here and bring a few kids when the season's over. Come on down. They'd enjoy it down here, and we'll just talk about their best memories of the season.
All right, well, let's do it.
All right, Augie, you know, you'll hear me Friday night up in the booth, and you know how I'll bring everything in. So, you know, sorry, I'm trying to put the voice on. My voice is a little hoarse right now, so you heard me last night. I was getting a little loud. But anyway, appreciate you being on with us today. Thank you for being on the phone and all that.
Yep, thank you for having me.
All right, Augie, have a great one, man. That's Augie Sanchez.
You as well, Steve.
You're right. Have a great weekend. That's Augie Sanchez in our Body Armor Prep Connection. And I want to thank Brad for getting that lined up. What's on the agenda the rest of the day, boys? We got about 4 minutes here.
Uh-oh, 4 minutes. How fast do you think I can talk to give the scores and all that for Friday night?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
You did that work.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the Friday night games, I tell you, just to go through them real quick, big district rivalry, Northside Christian versus Indian Rocks Christian. Final score is 47-7 win, Northside Christian, still number one, and Northside stays undefeated. And, of course, one of the big games looking out for, Lakewood versus Largo, Corey Moore versus Marcus Paschal. Final score, that 20-18, only a two-point conversion separated that close game. And Lakewood continues, and Largo now 6-1, Lakewood 6-3. Calvary Christian versus Lakewood Christian. Final score, 41-14. Warriors, 6-2 record and lead in 2M District 7. Eastlake still dominating. They have a 7-1 record. Final score against Clearwater, 62-48. And then of course I got to take a big shout out to Seminole versus Palm Harbor. Started off great, going into halftime 17-14. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get the lead at the last seconds. They had a point to get a field goal to try to tie it up to go into overtime, and unfortunately, it didn't happen. But still, as Sanchez was talking, great competitive game last night. Want to give a quick shout out to Dunedin versus Tarpon Springs. The Falcons won 3-0 in overtime. This is Mitch Disney's first win of the regular season. Congrats to Mitch and the Falcons. So, just to break down the other scores. Final Cornerstone Charter versus Keswick Christian, 29-0. St. Pete Catholic versus Bishop McLaughlin, 46-14. St. Pete versus Countryside, 24-9. Osceola versus DeSoto County, 22-15. Lakewood Ranch versus Gibbs, 34-18. And Bogey versus Hollins, of course, a big rivalry in the St. Pete area, 49-0.
Bogey?
Bogey, yeah, Bogusiega, yeah.
They God love bless them.
Yeah,
they lost three quarterbacks.
Yeah, exactly. So, a couple games to look forward to next week. District matchup, Osceola versus Largo. You're also going to have St. Pete versus Hollins, Pinellas Park versus Northeast, and Bogey will be at Gibbs. So,
well, that's a neighborhood backyard brawl right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Those two teams.
A lot of bye weeks this week, and so teams will get some rest. Going into next week, we'll see how some of them will do.
He's Brad Richardson. He's our high school expert, and he and I will be down here Tuesday, Sunbash Media Day, for the basketball tournament that will be the 27th, 29th of December in Northside Christian. We're going to have Northside Christian, Eastlake, Gateway, Charter, Wharton, Gibbs, Plant, Blake, St. Pete, and Calvary Christian will be down here Tuesday from 6:30 to 8 on Tuesday at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. Come on down and talk a little high school basketball. Great job, as always, my man.
As always. I mean, I got to upstage Ben here and there.
Well, it's tough to upstage Ben when it comes to the world of baseball. He did a superb job. Nice conversation with Jeff Mangold.
Oh, yeah, that was great having him on. He's wonderful. Great to talk to him. Not often you get somebody who's been inside the clubhouse who knows what it's like to play with, or not play, but interact with. Legends.
When I get done, well, I didn't want to say it on the air. I haven't really got done with the book yet. I'm halfway through. As soon as I get done with this book. Oh, these authors are nice to me. Give me all these books. I've got 13 books that I have been given from guests I've had authors on the air, and they're all, nice reads.
We'll all signed, too, right? Notes.
Yeah, all signed, yeah.
Oh, I hope so.
It's cool. But I'll give it to you when I get done. Because he's got some nice insight on A-Rod and Roger Clemens, and they were prima donnas. But you hear his personality. He's able to deal with people like that. I would just walk away. You would just.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.